We're doing Megillat Rut. Yesterday we had learned the beginning of our story about Elimelech, Elai Tavo Melucha. He was confident that he would be the next king, the first king of the Jewish people. Elimelech was the son of Nachshon ben Aminadav, the great leader of the tribe of Judah who forged the way into the Yamsuf. Boaz is his nephew. Boaz's father, Salmon, is Elimelech's brother. So Boaz is right now talking to his cousin's widow, meaning Mahlon's widow, Ruth, is actually his cousin's widow, because Boaz is a grandson of Nachshon ben Aminadav as well. Elimelech was his uncle. Elimelech was the direct son of Nachshon ben Aminadav. What I'm telling you now is, most of it's written in the Megillah clearly, at the end of the Megillah. It says, Peretz olidet Chetzron, etc., until Aminadav olidet Nachshon. Nachshon gave birth to Salmon. Salmon gave birth to Boaz. So Boaz is talking to his cousin's widow, and he tells her, stick around here. Don't worry. I want you to be here with my lands. So we're up to Pasuk Tetzain. She's quickly collecting in the field. The Megillah we're reading was compiled by Shmuel HaNavi. When he saw David as king, he felt it was very important to establish where David came from. And so he compiled the Megillah. So when we read the Megillah, it's important to pay attention. We're reading something that was compiled by one of the greatest prophets of all time, Shmuel. So we're continuing. Vegam sholta sholu la minatzvatim vazavtem veliketav lo tigaruba. You should also forget, leave things for her. Make believe it was a mistake. And when she collects it, obviously, don't yell at her. She continued collecting till nightfall. The Pasuk is pointing out, again, the refinedness of Ruth. She sensed that Boaz was telling the lads to do things on her behalf, and she did not take advantage of it. Vatilaket basadeh, the pasuk is stressing, she went back to collect like the rest of the poor in the field. She went to collect the gifts Hashem gave her instead of the gifts of Boaz. Vatachbot eheit asher liketa vayehi keifah seorim. And then, even though she was tired, it's the end of the day. How many times do people forget or neglect to do things at the end of the day, like pack their bag for tomorrow, like shower, like brush their teeth? There are things that people neglect to do at the end of the day because they're tired. So people become lazy. And the Pasuk is pointing out to us how Ruth was the exact opposite. She's going to take the wheat home. Instead of carrying a large bundle, she does the extra work to cleanse it. Vatachbot, she threshes the wheat that she collected, and that's what she's going to bring home, so that when she comes home, she brings her mother-in-law clean wheat. How many times do people neglect to wash dishes at night? They wake up to a sink full of dirty dishes, because it involves that extra, going that extra mile. So she carries a huge volume home. A fase orim is, if you could imagine, maybe 2 6-packs of cola. That's a huge volume that she's carrying home, a huge volume of wheat, eifa. It says the volume that an average person eats in a day is a fifth of an eifa. That's like 2 large loaves of bread. That's the volume a person eats in a day. 1/5, 20% of an eifa. So she was carrying a large volume home. When I say 6-pack, I mean of bottles, not of beer bottles. I mean like of Coca-Cola bottles, 2 6-packs of Coke. Vatisa vatavo ha'ir. She lifts all of that and she brings it back into the city. Her mother-in-law sees the huge volume that she's gathered that day. And then Ruth takes out the delicious food she had left over, and she gives that to her mother-in-law. And the pasuk points out she gave over what was left over from her being satiated. Very often we're not satiated to begin with, and when we have to give away some of our food, then we're certainly not satiated. No, she was. That, again, that's a very strong point in her favor, the kindness, that desire to help someone else. Even though they were very, very poor, but she's happy to give her mother-in-law from the leftover food, and she gives it with a good eye and a good heart. Vatomer lachamota. Her mother-in-law said to her, Eifo likatet ayom ve'ana asit. Where did you collect today? Yehi makirech baruch. Whoever gave you this good treatment should be blessed. And our sages say it is from this blessing that Boaz, in fact, was blessed. Boaz had children at such an old age. She had a child. Vatagid lachamota et asher aseta imo. So she told her mother-in-law how much she helped Boaz. Vatomer shem ha'ish asher asiti imo hayom Boaz. She tells her mother-in-law, the man who I benefited today, his name is Boaz. So Chazal asks, isn't this backwards? What does that mean? She benefited him. He benefited her. Asher asiti imo, the man who I did on his behalf, his name is Boaz. So Chazal say that's the great perspective of Ruth. Ruth says, I've actually benefited Boaz because I could have collected in any other field, and I collected in his field, so he got that mitzvah. And when a person has such a high perspective, so then they can actually see that they're doing kindness with the man who's giving them the donation. The Avudraham was a late commentator in the end of the Rishonim period, beginning of the Achronim. The Avudraham writes, why don't we make a blessing on giving tzedakah? You're giving charity, you're doing a mitzvah, why not make a blessing? So the Avudraham says, you don't make a blessing on a mitzvah that you cannot be confident you will perform. That could be the poor man will say, I don't want your donation, keep your money. So if you can't be confident you're doing the mitzvah, don't make a blessing on it. Ruth says, the man who I allowed to benefit me, the man who he got the mitzvah, he benefited, is Boaz. If we would say such a thing, I don't think that would be true. Meaning, you can say it, but do you really feel like I did him a favor? He did me the favor. He gave me something. On Ruth's level, it was real. Vatomer Naomi lechalata. Naomi tells her daughter-in-law, Baruchu l'Adonai, blessed is Boaz to Hashem, asher lo azav chasdo. Hashem has not rescinded, he has not removed his kindness, et achayim et hametim, because this kindness is both with the living and with the deceased. The deceased care that their family's taken care of. Here, he's taking care of us. Vataomer la Naomi. Naomi seter karov lanu ha'ish. I know you come from an aristocratic family. You should know that he is also the great aristocrat, the great leader of Israel, and we are also an aristocratic family. He's our relative. Don't look at him as though he's so wealthy and we're so poor, but he's our relative. We also come from an important family. He is the head of all the tribes of Israel, and he is our relative. He is our cousin. Mi goaleinu. He is one of those who should actually be buying out our properties. He should be redeeming the lands we have to sell. Now, Naomi is also a cousin here. Meaning, Naomi's father was Elimelech's brother. When Elimelech marries Naomi, he is marrying his niece. A man is prohibited from marrying his aunt. A person's not allowed to marry his aunt, that's biblically prohibited, but a person is not only permitted, but it's even recommended in Chazal to marry a niece. I don't know if today genetically we would recommend it, but...
You can do it in some cultures, but it's not that more, like you said, there's more genetic problems.
Yeah, so Elimelech marries his niece, Naomi, and so Boaz is her relative on her own. He's her cousin, because her father was also the son of Nachshon ben Aminadav. He's also their relative through marriage, through Elimelech. So they're all cousins. Technically, Naomi is her own children's cousin. Yeah, her children are Elimelech's through her husband. They're her cousins. When a person marries his niece, so then the children they'll have are also her cousin. Yeah.
Yesterday you were saying that Ruth cursed herself when she wanted her fate to be the same as Naomi's.
Yes.
But Naomi remarried.
When did Naomi remarry?
Is that what you just said?
No. Naomi, her original marriage with Elimelech, she married her uncle. The original marriage, yeah. When they had the children, Mahlon, Chilion, that was from Naomi's marriage with Elimelech. Here you see the chart, okay? We have, guys, you could download this from my website, yeah? Here we have Nachshon ben Aminadav, and his one son is Elimelech. His other son is Boaz's father. His other son is Naomi's father. And then there's another one, Ploni Almoni. We'll meet at the end of the Megillah. So Naomi is Nachshon's granddaughter. And she marries her uncle, Elimelech. Boaz is her cousin. He's also her relative through marriage, through Elimelech. And that's what I said, that the children that Naomi and Elimelech will have are also technically Naomi's cousins, right? They're her children, but they're her uncle's kids. Right? She married her uncle, so her uncle's kids are her cousins too, yeah? Yes?
And the law says it's recommended. That's what makes it so hard to understand. By our standards today, you know, Yitzhak is also a niece, and you gave difference, and those kinds of things, even in, you know, very traditional communities, it's usually not the recommended thing. That here you're going to have an average of 20-year plus age difference. It doesn't have to be that way, you know, the youngest can marry, but it's just strange. When you know, once something says it's permissible, it's very different than recommended.
What right.
You say recommended, it implies we should try it anyway.
Well,
it's a little tough. But, yeah. You know, don't understand it.
Chazal also tell us you shouldn't marry a woman who's a big age gap, which it seems is 10 years is considered a big age gap. 10 years and up, yeah.
But of course, they did, we know.
They did, it happened. Sometimes it was worthwhile.
So I didn't know that. So
Kalev marries Miriam and Batya, who are each about 40 years a senior.
Right. No, I mean, it happened recently, a tour of Rabbi Arya Levine's grandfather, and I think it was Rabbi Sonnenfeld, married someone 45 years younger after his wife died or something like that.
Yeah.
Had another child. So it's not saying it's a problem.
There's a lot to calculate. I'm saying in those days...
It's just when one says something's recommended, that we would try and emulate normally.
It means, all things being equal, this has a certain weight.
Yeah. And on top of that, maybe that didn't happen in those days. You mentioned genetics, which today is a real issue.
I don't know. I think it depends on the families. I know one family where they married within the family and they had genetic issues. I know another family where they all married within the family and they have no genetic issues.
My grandparents were cousins, and
We're continuing. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vatomer Rut Hamoaviyah. So Rut says, Gam Ki amar elai. You know, he told me, Ruth says, imanachim asher li tidbakin. You stick to my guys. Adim kilu et kol hakatzir asher li. Till they finish all my harvest. So here Chazal say, Ruth missed the point. Remember, we noticed that Boaz kept telling her, you stick to my girls. But Ruth didn't hear that. So Ruth tells her, and that's why the pasuk reiterates Hamoaviah, Ruth who came from Moab, and she was unaccustomed to this sensitivity. So she tells Naomi what she heard. Even though Boaz said, stick to my girls, what she heard is stick to my guys. Because she didn't see the difference. She didn't sense that he was telling her something different. And Naomi tells her, Vatomer Naomi el Rut Kalata. Naomi tells her daughter-in-law. She doesn't see the Moabite in her. She sees the daughter-in-law in her. Tov biti ki teitzei imna arotav. You stick to his girls. And this is the third time that Ruth is told this point, and now she's going to get it. V'lo yifyu vach b'sadeh acher. And don't let any other field attract you. V'atidbak b'narot Boaz lelaket. She stuck with Boaz's girls as she collected. Now this is an important point. Very often, a person can be frustrated with someone who is chozer b'tshuva or a ger, because you told them a point and he didn't get it. And you told them a second time, you know, you should do this, and they didn't get it. Well, Ruth, the greatest of converts, also didn't get it the first time and the second time, even though the leader of the generation told her, and a man who technically she owed him a lot. Now, it's when her mother-in-law finally drove the point home that she got it. And that's an important point in education. It says in Yoredeya, in Shulchan Aruch, when a person converts, don't look over their shoulder. They're going to make mistakes, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of growing. That's part of learning. No one can grow if everyone's looking at them every second. Why'd you do this and why'd you do that? No. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. That once a person has converted sincerely, leave them alone. Let them grow at their pace and let them make their mistakes, and don't catch them on every mistake and say, you know, you should have done that differently. It's mamash in Shulchan Aruch. Ruth finally gets it, and she's going to stick to Boaz's girls. And she is settled with her mother-in-law. They have a certain amount of territory, which, as we discussed last night, has lost much of its value because no one has planted it. And now they're going to have to sell. They're in dire straits. So we've gone from Pesach to Shavuos. They finished the harvest. Now Naomi tells Ruth, Biti halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. I want you to be settled. I want things to be good for you. I'm not settling down till I find you that you've settled down. Point aside, just a point to ponder. When I was in America as a Rav, so a group of us were trying to set people up with Shiduchim. And one of the guys said, it only works if you decide, so-and-so is my project. From now on, I'm going to work on getting so-and-so married. If you're focused on 50 guys, so sometimes you offer this guy, sometimes you offer that guy, and you might get nowhere. If you focus on so-and-so, then you're always thinking, how can I get him married? How can I get him married? Eventually, you'll get him married. I don't know. I never worked that way. But it's a thought. Saying it's something to think about. Naomi tells Ruth, my goal now is to get you married. I'm not settling down till you are married. Ve'ata halo Boaz modatanu. Boaz, our relative, asher hayit et na'arotav, that you were with his girls, hinehu zore et goren ha'seorim halayla. He is going to winnow tonight. He's going to wait till the night time when there's good wind. He's going to wait till the time that no one's going to pay attention to how much he has. You take out money out of the cash machine. Don't go waving it all around, counting it where everyone can see it. Boaz wants to count his grain and winnow it when the workers aren't around. It's not a good idea to have the workers feeling like you're so well off. One of the mistakes many bosses make is they show up to work in a Cadillac. They show up to work in the most expensive car. And then the workers always have this resentment. Why is the boss driving the fancy car? We're doing all the work. He'd be much better off showing up to work in a factory, in jeans, and a simple car like everyone else. Keep your Cadillac at home. Boaz says, I have to count my kernels, how much grain I have. I'm not going to do it where everyone can see it. So Naomi already anticipates what her cousin's going to do. She says, I know Boaz. He's going to be winnowing the grain tonight. V'rachatzt vasacht. You wash yourself, you go to mikvah, you anoint yourself. V'sam tzimlotayich alayich v'yarad tagoren. Dress nicely and go down there, and I want you to meet him there. Now, what's going on here? So the first time in the history of our classes in Machon Meir, we're actually going to deal with the question of what's going on here. Okay, so let's begin. What's prohibited between a man and a woman? Well, if the woman's a nida, then there's a biblical prohibition of Yehareg Val Yavar. A person should rather die than being intimate with a woman who's a nida. When she's had her onset, if she hasn't had 7 clean days and gone to mikvah, that's a biblical prohibition. Goes so far as if a person's own wife is a nida, it's not clear that he could be her doctor. Let her get another doctor, because even if he's the doctor in town, so import a doctor, because it's an Isser V'Harg Val Yavar. What I'm telling you now is in Rishonim and in Shulchan Aruch, in the laws of family purity. What if the woman goes to mikvah? So then what happens? So then the prohibitions are on different levels. At one point in Jewish history, the rabbis forbade any form of contact between a man and a woman, and they made it on the level of nashgaz. Nashgaz is an acronym, the Talmud says. Chazal saw that if people don't understand that being with a woman is seriously prohibited, then all kinds of inappropriate things are going to happen. There's a biblical prohibition. A woman shouldn't be a prostitute. What's that prohibition? I don't understand. If you're not allowed to touch a woman, and you're not allowed to be intimate with a woman unless she's your wife, so then why do I need another biblical prohibition saying a woman shouldn't be a woman of ill repute? So the way it works in the Torah is a little different. Technically, in the Torah, if a man and a woman want to get together, so they have two options. They have an option of getting married. They also have an option of what's called a pilegesh. They can decide, we are bound to one another, and without a marriage contract. Chazal forbade that type of thing. Meaning, if a man and a woman decide they want to be unite, and they don't want to be married, they don't want the obligations of a regular marriage. But it's not like she's going to be with him today, and in a week she's going to be with the next guy. They're going to live together. That's what's called in Chazal a pilegesh, like plagisha. They're half married. They're dedicated to one another, but there's no monetary obligations. So technically, they could do that. They don't have to have a wedding ceremony. Nowadays, they can't. Chazal forbade it because Chazal said, first of all, David HaMelech saw that people were taking advantage of girls. So David HaMelech extended the prohibition of Yichud. You're not even allowed to be alone in the room with her. Forget marrying her. You're not married, you can't be alone in the room with her. There have to be other people present. That prohibition already encompassed the idea of Nagia, you're not even allowed to touch her. And without that prohibition, biblically, technically, the two can decide, we're getting together without marriage. She's going to be dedicated to him, he's going to be dedicated to her, but there will be no monetary obligations between them. It's not a marriage, it's what's called a pilegesh. So if two people decide, we're building, you can't say building a house together, but we're building a relationship together, they could do that. And then there's no prohibition of Yichud. Then there's no prohibition of Nagia. And the two can be intimate, and she can have his kids. And we find in Tanakh there are people who did that. Now, what Naomi is telling Ruth is, it could be that when you go down there, he'll offer you marriage. It could be that when you go down there, he'll offer you a relationship, but not marriage. The guy did have 70 kids already. Whatever he offers, you take. And that's why I want you to go to mikveh, because once you've gone to mikveh, technically, anything he wants can happen, if you agree. From the days of King David onward, you can't be alone with a girl. There's no such concept as, maybe she'll be my Pilagesh. What Ruth did was permissible until the period of King David. Why did King David prohibit it? Because King David saw how his own son, who was a prince, violated his own daughter, who was a princess. And she wasn't his Pilagesh, because when he was finished violating her, he kicked her out of the house and said, don't come back. So he said, wait a second. The idea that the Torah left us this opening where technically two people can decide to be together, the men can't be trusted to do this appropriately. And so David HaMelech said, there's a prohibition of Yichud, even on a woman that could technically be your Pilegesh. And that's the expansion, and that's the prohibition of Yichud, Negiah, Pilegesh, technically under these circumstances. I'm oversimplifying it. There's a lot more to discuss, but in a nutshell, that's what's going on here. Yes?
With David and his sons, I mean, A, from what I understood, there's no Yichud with your sister.
They were half-sisters. She was born from another wife.
Would have been permissible to marry her.
And she was born before her mother converted. She was pregnant with her. So she was really a giyoret.
Technically, that would have been permitted.
I'm saying...
Can you marry your half-sister?
That's what I read.
No. So in this case, because she was a giyoret, I'm saying her mother was pregnant before she converted to Judaism and married David.
So she wasn't really biblically a half-sister.
Right. Technically, a ger can marry his sister. Technically. Rabbinically, not. Let's deal with that when we get to it in Navi. Yeah. They want us to switch rooms? Okay, so we'll pause here. Okay.